Welcome to the stream. I'm Ahmed Shahabuddin. Today, living through the war in Ukraine. How are Ukrainians dealing with the latest shifts in the conflict, including the prospect of further Russian annexation? Take a listen to what Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky had to say on Tuesday.
If someone over there in Russia thinks that they can get away with everything they are doing in the occupied territory, if someone over there in Russia hopes that the world will betray its own values, frightened by some Russian announcements about annexation, then they are wrong. Each subsequent escalating step by the occupier only confirms the fact that the world must act even tougher.
Today, we'll hear more about the war from people inside Ukraine. With us from Kiev, Oleksandra Matvichuk, Executive Director for Ukraine's Center for Civil Liberties. In Kharkiv, Maria Avdeva, a Security Analyst and Research Director for the European Expert Association. And Tatiana Pechonchik, CEO of the Human Rights Center Zamina. And as always, you can join this conversation with your questions and comments right here in our live YouTube chat. I want to start with the basics. Let's start where you are, Maria, in Kharkiv. What is it like on the ground there? I mean, you heard, the president of Ukraine had to say. What are the people of Ukraine feeling there, where you are?
I think actually the situation in Kharkiv is very important to understand the further steps of Putin and Russia. Because after very successful Ukrainian counteroffensive in Kharkiv, the almost whole territory of Kharkiv region was liberated, and it was under Russian occupation for more than 6 months. And with this defeat and with the Russian troops fleeing of the Kharkiv region, I have seen it myself, like they abandoned their tents and military vehicles and just run out to the territory of Russia or to still occupied territories. Putin has to show something to his own population, show some kind of victory, some kind of progress, and to give something about which he can further mobilize Russian society and to give grounds for further support of this ongoing war and invasion. And of course, people in Kharkiv feel very energetic about the developments, about the liberation. But on the other hand, they have a very difficult when we have to understand the situation, because people have no access to running water, electricity, no basic supplies for 6 months plus, and still, even after the territories are liberated, it's still very difficult for them just simply to survive.
And Maria, forgive me. I mean, they're basically starving. They're struggling to survive, but it's still dangerous. I mean, there are still attacks even this week, for example, on a railway. I mean, is it true that even though it's been liberated, it's still tenuous?
Absolutely. Russia is continuously targeting civilian infrastructure. Just in Kharkiv, they targeted the infrastructural objects which supply electricity and heating, which means the winter will be very harsh for people.
Right.
And Kharkiv is only 40 kilometers away from the border, which means if the Western weapons helping to protect the air defense weapons will not be supplied, it will be very difficult for Ukrainian army to stop the upcoming Russian missiles, because Russia is actually showering the region with missiles almost every day.
And it certainly seems, despite everything you said and you outlined, that the momentum is on the Ukrainian side, or at least a lot of analysts are saying that. I do want to ask you, despite the sort of setbacks that we've seen militarily, Putin seems to be doubling down, right? On Friday, expected to sign these documents after this sort of so-called referendum, this vote in those four territories that are due to be annexed. I'm wondering, with that in mind, what do you think that that's about, Oleksandra? I mean, you're a human rights lawyer. Is there anything legitimate about this referendum? And if it's not legitimate, why is it significant? It's not the first time we've seen Putin do this, is it?
It's a shame referendum, the total fake, which was organized in the form of mockery and intimidation of Ukrainians who lived in the occupied territories. But there is a very understandable reason why Putin organized this fake procedure. Because this fake referendum is not legal procedure, but informational special operation. And he tried to repeat his so-called successful story when he organized the same fake referendum under the rifles in occupied Crimea 8 years ago. We was here during this so-called referendum. Mm-hmm. We working here through our mobile groups, mm-hmm. and we saw how Russians persecute active people who mm-hmm. try even peacefully suppress the occupation. Mm-hmm. But after several years, people in Europe and other countries start to think, maybe Crimeans want to join Russia for free,
right,
because they even have such kind of referendum. So Putin tried to use this informational special operation with two goals. He tried to show the happy people who join Russia for Russian population, and he tried to rely upon on short people memory and repeat this so-called successful story with Crimean referendum with European and other kind of audience.
Now, I appreciate that context and those nuances. I mean, it certainly seems like he's trying to obfuscate and confuse the world. Seems like a strategy there. I want to also share with you, you know, a lot of people asking, is there an end in sight to this war? One of those people, Jason J. Smart, a political advisor in Warsaw, Poland, had this to say. Take a listen.
The war in Ukraine continues to be very tense. It would seem that the Russian army, though, has continued to fail to make any gains or even to maintain the gains that they made months ago. Ukraine continues to be on the offensive, pushing and pushing, and what they're doing now has been very successful. And we see also that the Russians are suffering from huge losses, low morale, and the general population who's increasingly turning against the war. It would certainly seem that the momentum at this point is on the side of Ukraine.
So I'm curious, Tatiana, what do you make of his comments there? I mean, does Ukraine have the momentum? And why is Putin kind of belligerently, you know, taking things out of the 2014 playbook, but also seemingly doing what he wants, ignoring sort of the reality on the ground?
Yes, Russian troops are being kicked off from more and more Ukrainian territories, and Ukrainian armed forces are doing their job very well, although for us this is very difficult because many of us have friends and relatives defending our country with weapon. For example, my brother, he's an IT programmer, but he's now in front near Donetsk. And the co-founder and board member of my NGO, Human Rights Defender, Maxim Butkevich, mm-hmm. is who also went to protect our land as a part of Ukraine armed forces are now, he's now in the Russian captivity. Mm-hmm. So for us, these victories, also we also hope for all our friends and colleagues return and come back after this war ends. But as we see, as you correctly said, there is a point of escalation, and Putin announced a mass mobilization in Russia, which means that these unprepared soldiers, many of them will die because they are not prepared for this war, but also from Ukrainian side also there will be more people killed. And also looking at the picture, what the Russian army is leaving behind, we fixed a huge amount of atrocities and war crimes. And our field mission just came back yesterday from Kharkiv region. Mm-hmm. My colleagues were working in Balaklia, in Kupiansk, in Izum. And in a week, they documented many instances of executions of civilians, cases of rape, looting, torture, enforced disappearances. And we may say that Russia is using it as a method of their warfare.
But
the Russian troops, they are just leaving a lot of their everything behind because they are forced to retreat and they are forced to just run. And we have seen in a lot of cases when the Russians were just abandoning everything and using the bicycles or cars they stole from the civilians in the Rus territory they were recently occupying. And this shows us that Russian army is not as strong as Putin wants everyone to think.
Of course.
And that what is he now doing is probably struggling to show something to his own population and to the world. And also this blackmailing with the nuclear threat is one of these means. Right.
And I do want to talk about the nuclear threat and also those war crimes and all your the evidence that you've gathered, but also how that factors into whether there is an end in sight, in fact, to this war. If you look at my screen here, Ian Bremmer tweeting Kremlin billboards that are announcing Donetsk, Luhansk, and all these other four, the total of four territories, saying that the annexations come shortly. You see these banners in Russia. When you see these things in Russia, do you think that's actually going to change things on the ground? I know Maria said earlier that Oleksandra, she's a little worried about the winter. When you see these billboards, what comes to mind?
Well, at first, we should not...
We'll start with Oleksandra. Go ahead.
I will start with a point that the first thought which came to my mind in that we are fighting not only for the territory, but for the people who live on these territories. That's why we have no other choice. Sooner or later, we will deoccupy this territory and liberate all our peoples.
And I'm glad you brought up the people living in that territory. We actually have a mashup of some people living in the periphery of the four territories that Russia's annexing that you can see there. And they kind of seem to have some varying views on a lot of things, really, the legitimacy of the vote and how things may end. Take a listen.
The turnout was from 15 to 30% of the inhabitants of the city. So to take the results from that, any mathematician will say that this is not statistics, but fantasy.
I'm in favor of the referendum. Personally, I don't care who it is. I'm for peace. Because I have two grandchildren and I worry about them.
I consider what is happening there to be a total circus. People are being forced to vote. It doesn't make any difference if they vote or not. People are trying to save their lives so they don't get killed. That's my opinion. These votes are not legitimate.
Maria, your reactions, I mean, Dennis calling it a total circus, I would imagine the three of you agree with that. But then you also heard from, you know, someone from an older generation, Valentina, there saying she's supporting the referendum.
Well, I would say that some of the people who live on the occupied territories for all these 7 years since Russia's first started the invasion, they are held as hostages because they have no choice. Russia is filling the territories with military, which actually all the time threaten the population living there. And let's take into consideration situation in Zaporizhia, part of the territory where the nuclear power plant is actually located is occupied by Russians, and people working at the nuclear plant cannot go home. They are forced to stay there. They are forced to do what the Russian military is saying them, whereas the center of the region, Zaporizhia itself, is in the Ukrainian-controlled territory and constantly every day shelled by the Russian army. So we cannot say that people on the occupied territories have a possibility actually to say and independently what their thoughts are, because right. It's like a neighbor came to your house and puts a gun at your head and asks you to vote freely.
Right.
Of course, this is all a fake.
Right. And then, you know, go ahead, please. Yeah, please, go ahead. Go ahead, Mary.
I would like to emphasize what important sentence with this woman, a woman told. She told, I'm voting for Russia because I want peace, because I'm caring about my family, children, etc. And this is something I've observed for 8 years, because for 8 years, we have part of Ukrainian territories under occupation of Russia, I mean Crimea and part of Lugansk and Donetsk region. And some people choose to take so-called survival model. So they told, We are not in favor of Ukraine. We are not in favor of Russia. We are ordinary people. We're not interested in politics. We just want to have our like routine work and to raise our children, etc. But as a human rights defender who documented war crimes for 8 years on these territories, I know for sure that this survival model will not save these people, and unfortunately.
I appreciate you making that point, Tatiana.
I can agree with that because my NGO is documenting the enforced disappearances and abductions, and we gathered information about 328 cases where local self-government representatives or journalists, activists, volunteers were kidnapped, and out of them, 16 persons were tortured till death. And half of these people are still in captivity, and they are kept incommunicado in the basements. Mm-hmm. But this practice of enforced disappearances and vast application of torture is not new, because when Russia occupied Crimea back in 2014, the occupational authorities and the Russian army acting together with a local paramilitary group, which is called Crimean Self-Defense, immediately started from the practice of abduction of local activists. From that time, 2014, 15, 16, 44 persons in Crimea were abducted, and majority of them were of Crimean Tatar origin, the indigenous people of Crimea. And then they immediately continued this practice in Donbas, where hundreds of people became victims of enforced disappearances. And now we can speak about thousands of victims of enforced disappearances, because only one NGO collected over 300 cases, and there are many other NGOs that collect this data.
And I appreciate you talking about Donbas. Obviously, for those who may not know, that is the northernmost region of Ukraine. And, you know, we've seen the documentation of war crimes, the allegations being made, not just by human rights defenders and lawyers like yourself, but the UN's Independent International Commission released findings that Russia's committed war crimes in Ukraine. This is your tweet, Maria. You visited in Izyum the bodies that were being, I think, hundreds of exhumations, as you say, unmarked graves, people being lifted out. Witnesses confirmed to you that they saw people being shot on the streets by Russians. Others died from shelling and a lack of access to health care. You describe it in your tweet as so horrible you could barely breathe. I'm curious, what can you share with us about that experience? And what worries you most about the winter? We've seen the nuclear threats. We discussed it briefly. We've seen the threats of depriving Europe and others of energy. What worries you most?
Well, I've been for the last 2 weeks going around Kharkiv region to the areas that were just recently liberated. And we have seen one and the same picture. It would be torture cells, where Russians will put people when they were under occupation. The other thing will be mass graves, because the mass grave in Izyum were about 450 graves unmarked with just numbers were found. It's just the only one, the most terrible case. But there are the same situations in other occupied regions. Mm-hmm. And then people were telling that they were seeing the others being killed. I have personally talked to witnesses, not one, but many. Some of them saw it. The others say that their relatives just disappeared and they don't know where they are. People, because all the communications and all the and utilities were cut off, they are looking with a very great concern in the upcoming winter. What will they do? Mm-hmm. Now they are offered to be evacuated. So if you want, you can be evacuated to other territories of Ukraine, where you will have more or less conditions for living through the winter.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting to hear you outline those concerns and seeing some of the questions that are coming in to us on our YouTube chat. I want to share one with you, Alexandra. Hunter Thompson saying, wasn't Ukraine winning? How are Russia managing to annex Ukrainian territory? Doesn't that involve them being in the territory? Was fake Western news. Obviously, you know, raising two varying kind of narratives here, that the Western media might not always get this right, but also that, you know, it's confusing. How is Russia actually going to annex 15% of the territory, Alexandra? Does that mean Ukraine's not winning? And what is needed to win or at least to end this war? Is it weapons?
I'm a human rights lawyer who spent 20 years for defend human rights in Ukraine and Rusi region. And now when I ask how we can help people in occupied territory to survive from the terror which Russians organized there, I found myself in a worse situation when I answer, please provide Ukraine with weapons. Because all my 20 years experience in human rights defense couldn't help me because any legal instrument are not work. Russia brutally ignored the international humanitarian law and all decisions of international organizations. Mm-hmm. So I will remind you that this war started not in February this year, but in February 2014. And Putin started this war.
Yes.
Only...
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you made this point. I appreciate you making the point that it didn't start now. But I'm just going to push back a little bit on this question of these threats that we hear. I mean, is this an actual... Do you imagine... We've heard these threats before from Putin. Is that a real possibility in your mind as someone who's been following this and documenting all this, Alexandra?
Putin will stop only when he will be stopped. So he will do everything which he wants until he will be allowed to do it. So the response to these questions depend on international community.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt you again. I'm terribly sorry. But in the spirit of time, I want to understand, what does the international community need to do most in your mind as a human rights lawyer? Is it send long-range weapons? I mean, that's been the demand from Ukraine.
Long-range distance weapon, economical sanction which can throw stability of Russian economy to feed this war, and justice. We really need justice because Russian troops committed these war crimes for decades in Chechnya, in Moldova, in Syria, in Libya, in Mali, and they enjoyed impunity. They start to believe they can do everything what they wanted. We must break the circle of impunity. We need justice.
And with that in mind, I want to come to you, Maria. I want to share with you a video comment that we received from Maxim Panchenko. Take a listen.
Russia is now trying to mobilize a huge amount of reservists in an attempt to reverse what otherwise seems to be a losing battle. And in this context, Russian disinformation practices are key. In addition to the original messages about Ukraine allegedly being a Nazi state, which was used to invade the country in the first place, Russia is now trying to paint the picture of fighting the entire NATO bloc in Ukraine, which of course heightens the risks of a potential nuclear incident.
You know, Maria, I have to ask you, what do you think of that? And also, you know, in our YouTube chat, a lot of people are very concerned and curious about this nuclear war threat. We've heard it time and time again. Is it a real threat or is it just, you know, saber rattling? Is it just buying time? What is it in your mind?
Well, we have to take this very serious and we have to be prepared. And for your question, if Ukraine needs the weapons the most, yes, this is the only way out. And we need weapons to protect civilians. The more long-range, high-precise weapon Ukraine has, the quicker all the territory of Ukraine will be liberated. And that's the only goal Ukraine has, to liberate all the territories that are now unlawfully occupied by Russia. How shall we respond to the nuclear threat and nuclear blackmailing, provide Ukraine more weapons, show Putin that all the West is united, and we are all united, and we will not let him continue this blackmailing, because if he only succeeds in this, he will go further. He will go for Baltic states, for Poland, anywhere he wishes, because that's his dream, and he tells about it openly. He wants, I mean, Putin to restore the Russian Empire, and for that he won't be stopped only in Ukraine.
No, most certainly, and I want to thank you, Tatiana, and all of you for joining us. I mean, you know, we've seen that the Washington, D.C. and the EU are planning to impose additional sanctions on Russia. We don't know if that'll be enough, but it's certainly not the last conversation we'll have here at the stream. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.